Smell You Later, your favorite spooky podcast of the week.
Oh, shit. Is this going up on Halloween or near it?
A couple days before. I think Halloween's on like a Thursday. On Halloween, actually, there is smell related. Marissa Zappas is having an event at Stell for her new scent, Carnival of Souls.
Oh, that's right. Everyone go to that. Yeah. It's in 2 days.
Wear a costume.
Yeah, pull up. Are you going?
I never do anything for Halloween. I get whatever the opposite of FOMO is, fear of going out.
Whatever it is, you just refuse to participate in general.
I get nervous when it's a lot of people who are trying to be extra.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to do a bit. I hate when people do bits.
I hear you. Also, I know it's a weeknight, but that close to the weekend doesn't bode well for anyone. Halloween and New Year's Eve, in terms of bar nights, not the ones.
It's going to be crazy, I'm sure. Yeah, I never have Halloween plans either. I was like, if anyone would invite me, maybe I would do that.
Now that I live in a little neighborhood, I'm wondering, will we get trick-or-treaters? Do I need to buy a little bag of candy?
Unless you have like a stoop with an open door.
Oh.
Probably not. I don't know. Yeah, I do wonder about that.
I'm afraid to give kids candy. They're just going to call me a groomer or something. So maybe I'll just sit this one out. Happy Halloween.
Kids should give me candy.
That's the best part of being an adult. You can just give yourself candy.
That's true. That is true. I have a job. Broadly speaking, have you ever had a favorite costume?
Girl, all my costumes are my favorite costume. Let's see. I had a real penchant for being the blue M&M when I was younger. And I don't know why, because he's such a dumbass. Isn't he like Bill Clinton? Wasn't he like a shade of Bill Clinton?
Maybe? I don't remember.
It was the blue. Yeah, I don't know. I was on my M&M tip for far too many years. And then my mom made me Kermit the Frog 1 year, but I'm too young to remember. But it was a pretty cunty costume, I have to be honest. If I'm remembering this correctly, my head was like in his mouth. She made it, obviously. And then she had ping pong balls for eyes. I don't know. That was good.
I love a costume when your head is the mouth.
Yes. Or I just want to wear something on my head every Halloween. But I do have to say that the 1 year that we really did it was my Helga Pataki costume. That was the one.
That was good. I think I remember seeing photos of that on Instagram. And I was like, damn.
One earlier this year on Twitter / probably just gay Twitter, they were like, post your photo with the most likes. And it was all of these guys that my friends that I follow, just like hot, tan, ripped bodies on a beach, like whatever. Just tits on tits. And then I was like, I wonder what mine is. I look, it's me as Helga Pataki. I'm like, okay, cool. Very cool. What was your favorite costume?
What comes to mind is when I was in, I think when I was in third grade, my mom made me the Lisa Frank ballerina bunny.
Oh, cute.
That was like mid-90s. So Lisa Frank was the shit at the time. And everyone was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want Halloween this year.
That's so cool. I think both you and I were raised by crafty moms. So we had a little more fun. And I'm happy. I'm like really happy about that too, because not that there's anything wrong with store-bought. Store-bought's fine. Shout out Ina Garten. But yeah, having a homemade costume is way cooler.
I always was jealous of my peers who went to get like the store-bought costume, because to me, in my child mind, I'm like, oh, that's the official costume. That's the real way to do it. And now I'm like, no, idiot.
Yeah, I see that. I never felt that, though. I think I judged everyone because they would buy them and take them out of the bag, but no one would ever steam them. And even at 7 years old, I was like, I see the creases. Congrats on your Power Rangers costume, but do you want an iron? Anyway.
Those who can't do, shop.
That's true. And I love to shop.
Yeah. Those who can't shop, I don't know, but those who can't shop do. Steal.
You.
Tynan, what are you smelling today?
Okay, so I am repeating the brand that I talked about last time, but not the fragrance. And mostly I try to diversify, but I like this one, so I'm going to talk about it. I'm wearing another scent from Forever Mood by Jackie Asamoah. And this scent is You Remind Me. And this is sold in as, they're not calling it a musky fragrance. And by they, I mean us, because I guess I worked on this. But we did lean into the musk of it all with this blend of apricot skin, orange flower, and sensual musks. And on skin, it is warm and sweet in a fruit-forward way. And to me, it smells like the fuzzy skin of a peach against skin. Mm-hmm. It's like a mix of the any part of your body with little downy baby hairs on it and the skin of a peach, because it has that like soft plushness and it's sweet like fruit, but not like a fruity fragrance. It's just one of those sort of nice amalgamations of florals, fruit, and musks. It's really pretty. Simple and round and not groundbreaking, but unique enough to make me go back to it. I've been wearing this a little bit. I can't say for sure. I should have confirmed, but I think You Remind Me is an Usher reference, which I think is great.
Oh.
Yeah, I am surprised by how much I like the one that I thought I would not like at all. I know last time I talked about how the wear of the first two Forever Mood fragrances that I wore left me wanting for more. This one doesn't. And also the one I wore yesterday, I don't know what it's called. It's the yellow one. That one also turned out to have a projection that I liked. So I'm definitely going to revisit I Am Her, the one I wore first, because I think that one's like really fun and cute as well. And maybe it was a bad projection day for me, or maybe that one is just not as strong. But I have now worn my way through all of Forever Mood fragrances, and I think they're really fantastic. Shout out, Jackie.
How many are there?
There are four. And they're pretty honestly inexpensive. They have a custom. So the bottle, I think this bottle's a custom mold. It looks like a big fat jewel. Yeah. And it's really cute and pretty. I've never seen another bottle similar to. Yes, we've seen bottles like this, but I think this is custom. All that to say, a 1.7 ounce is $79, which is not terrible. And the 0.34 are $28. I feel like you get a lot of really good fragrance for not a whole ton of money. And yeah, I love it.
Well, do you know what perfumers or what fragrance house you work with?
I should. I don't. Or I don't remember.
I'm always curious if brands keep that stuff under wraps, especially with contractors.
Yeah. I'm more curious if, and this is no shade, because again, I don't really remember who Jackie worked with, but I'm more curious that if it's not a Firmenich or a Givenchy, if they're like, we're not going to talk about it, you know? I don't know.
There's Mon, there's IFF, there's a bunch of them.
True.
Like,
that is fair.
Probably even haven't heard of, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So many. The world of fragrance, so opaque.
The world. Never heard of it. Say, well, what do you smell like today?
Okay, so I smell like Victoria Beckham, 2150 Reverie. It's an interesting name. 2150, I'm assuming military time. So that's 9:50 p.m. Dream. I don't know.
Wait, sorry. What is the name?
2150.
2150? Oh.
Reverie. I think it has something to do with a dream time. I don't know. I'm not asleep at 9:50 at night. Are you crazy?
You're also not awake at 9:50 in the morning, so it goes both ways.
Really true. My circadian chronotype is that of a teenager. But
yeah.
This is like a tobacco-y, leathery vanilla. It's so good. It's so deep, and it smells like a really thick wool blanket or like a wool throw that you went camping with and put it over your lap while you were toasting marshmallows over a campfire. Because there's like an interesting aspect of it that smells just like, you know, I would do this as a kid because I'm evil, that you put the marshmallow in the fire and then you just let it burst into flames until it becomes charred, just like a charred blob.
Yeah, those are the best ones.
Yes. And it's like inedible, but it's just, I don't know, fun to watch this thing melt and burn. It smelled like that, like the inedible charred marshmallow.
Okay. I am so mad that you have this and I don't. Victoria Beckham, feel free to send me that.
Dude, you need to freaking check your emails, man.
I do. Listen. Not you telling me how to respond to emails, ma'am. Miss looked at her phone once a week. No, I don't. I didn't get this one, or else I would have called it in.
I'll forward you the email. But it's so good. It's hands down my favorite Victoria Beckham scent. I think all of her scents, the three of them that she released, are really nice.
I agree.
But I was like, oh, these are really pretty and these are really fancy smelling, but I don't really think they're sable scents. But this is a sable scent.
God damn it, I need it. Yeah, I remember because they came out almost this time a year ago.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
It was like right around Thanksgiving, I feel. And I remember being like, okay, here goes. And we know that Victoria Beckham's fashion line is like actually successful. I know it's called Victoria Beckham, but it's not like a celebrity band. It lives independently of her, which is really hard to do. Obviously, I was interested. Oh, and the beauty bangs too. But I was interested in what was going to happen. And I really like all three of the original launches.
Yes.
Like, none of them read to me like you are describing this, which makes me even more
This is
curious.
definitely a departure from the initial three. It's
Yeah.
a lot deeper, and I feel like this was their trying to do a masculine scent, because I do feel like if out of the collection, this would be the one that a man would be like, yes, I feel comfortable wearing this. It does give me shades of a Replica by the Fireplace. It gives me a bit of that,
That's all you gotta say.
but it's a little like drier, if that makes sense. Or
Would you say that it reads or leans more woody or more vanilla?
ooh,
Or leather, for that matter?
more vanilla for sure. I don't know. I
Okay.
think there's equal wood and equal vanilla, but it's like a burnt wood. Like a ch
Ugh.
there's a charred quality to it. That's really nice.
Sure. Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, so good for you. Also, the bottle, it looks like a flask, is a dark hunter green, which also reads to me like it's like the color of all men's camping gear or like all
Yeah.
outdoorsy gear. So I'm like,
It's
okay.
very like Ralph Lauren.
Yes, but
What am I wrong in saying? I guess I could just literally use the computer in front of me.
let me use the computer in front of me.
Weren't all of her bottles beveled and then this one is smooth?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get any of the other ones full.
No, I'm wrong. I'm wrong. I need that.
Okay, what I can tell you, now that I've used my computer in front of me, the top note is tobacco leaves. That's what they're calling out. Middle is plum. Another one for plum this year.
Yeah.
Base notes, vanilla, tonka beans, cedarwood. That's
All
all
right.
they're telling us. But I do feel like that I would not have clocked the plum. Not at all. But I can see where the plum brings like a little bit of sugary sweetness. Like a just a teeny bit.
I'm with this plum era that we seem to be
I
entering.
wonder if it's one of those, I don't know what the name is. There's like a cognitive bias when you learn something new or something sticks in your head and then suddenly you see it everywhere.
Yeah,
I have a
yeah.
plum bias.
No, yeah, maybe we're two for two with Glossier in a very short amount of time. I don't think plum is the most left of center fruit you could ever use, but we
I just
seem to be
started
going
thinking about
somewhere.
it because of the Die Hard with the Vengeance fragrance, and then Glossier launched one, and then now this one, and then I don't know why they decided to call out plum. Plum was the quiet part. You say the quiet part loud, but
Yeah.
like, interesting that you did.
Very.
There was another scent we talked about a couple episodes ago. I feel like that also called out plum, but forget.
It's giving,
It's giving
You know what else was giving was when maybe we shouldn't start like that. I don't want to. Anyway, today on the show,
Put it in the show.
we have Costa Brazil joining us, and they've been a little bit of a hot topic for the two of us because historically, it's not a type of fragrance that I love, but you really like it, Sable, right? And I get it. I get it. Yeah. It also became a really quick cult classic, I feel, both not even in fragrance. The girls are wearing it. And then because of some bad business decisions by their parent company, which we'll touch on very briefly, Costa folded or got taken off market, got shut down.
When a brand like that declares bankruptcy, it is like what happens to those brands.
Yeah.
We wonder the same thing when Time got bought, then when Meredith got bought. It's like, what happens to Exovane? No one knows. Nobody knows.
Yeah, same but different though, because like when your parent company, which is essentially how you're funding it,
Yeah,
loses
true.
their money, it's like, where does that go? But we're not the money girls. But what we will say is that we saw, I mean, they weren't the only brands that this affected. We're thinking JVN, we're thinking Iosance, a bunch
Rosie,
of,
Huntington, Whitley.
yes.
We came back. I would assume that they would get offered to buy their brands back.
Not from what I've heard,
But yeah, no, like
it
that's not the
was.
case. And I'm just like, why? Take the money if someone wants to buy their brand back. Like, why
Right.
would you want to?
Well, we didn't want to focus too much on that, but it is what sort of kept them top of mind lately because they're back and everyone is really excited about it. So we thought, what better time to connect with the brand and chat with the founder than their resurgence?
So we have Francisco Costa on this episode.
Hi, everyone. I'm Francisco Costa. I'm the founder and creator of Costa Brazil.
Let's start you off with this. So we start every episode by asking our guest, Francisco, what do you smell like today?
I smell like myself. I smell like aroma. I smell like Costa Brazil.
Love, love. We know many people who also smell like Costa Brazil because we know a bunch of their very big fans. So you're not alone there.
You know, I appreciate that because it's not really a intent. It's more like a state of mind. And that's how the fragrance happens. Because I was in the Amazon. I was with the Y101 tribe in the Acre region of Brazil, a state, the best of most states, the borders with Peru. And I went to visit with them because obviously I was always very interested in their culture, great people. And no preconceived idea or purpose yet, but I wasn't really expecting anything, but really understand them. And of course, everywhere you go, if you're curious, you're aware, you know, you're looking around. At the end, you come up with something fun and good that's interesting. And that's how it happened. I was with them for about 10 days. And on the seventh day, I got to experience this incredible scent. They were tossing some weird rocks into the fires because they, every afternoon, this is in the middle of the forest, right? They built those bonfires. And for the first time, I actually noticed that they were tossing those rocks into the fire. It happened to be a resin called Breo. And it was just the most beautiful scent. It was this insane woodsy thing. I had no idea. I had never seen it before. So I came back with that and I initiated the whole idea of creating our products with really indigenous ingredients. Mind you, the time they spent with them was just so fruitful. And that was really like, wow, this is for real. So I took that resin back with me south and I sent it to a couple of labs. Next day, I had an ingredient called Breo, which really was the olfactive, became the olfactive signature of Costa Brazil. But there's a lot more to the story, and I'll come back to it.
So that one moment inspired the whole fragrance, is that right?
Precisely. It was a live inspiration, if I may say.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, in a, I'm touching it, and it's like this resin that grows on the bark of the tree. Obviously, it's very much like frankincense or what have you. And it oxidizes and becomes this incredible rock. You sometimes get a very dark one, sometimes you have a very white ones. I did some research after all for the next year on this ingredient alone, really going to schools and universities in Brazil and what have you, trying to decipher the whole ingredient, actually to understand it. And obviously, it's besides the incredible scent, the ingredient itself is antimicrobial, antibacterial, mosquito repellent. So it's like kind of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very lucky to have found that. But then phase two, I come to New York and I bring with me this bag, literally smuggled through customs. It had leaves. I had anything that I had found that was interesting to me at location and started creating the fragrance. And there was a mishmash of all the experiences I had with Breo being in the center front of it all. So that's really aroma. Again, today I actually noticed there's a lot of aromas out there. And I didn't want to call anything because I just wanted the fragrance that kind of became second skin or became like your sweat, became like you or something that would actually have an appreciation and also pleasure. I was never really into fragrance, although I have a very good nose. Fragrance always to me, it was about the others, the room. The fragrance, it's the first one to walk in the room, the one to leave, right? The last one to leave because it's the trail. And it's really about the viewers or the people scenting it. And to me, the scent I was trying to create was something that would make me feel good. So that's how it was. Yeah.
I'm curious from what you just told us. So you were basically making this scent from scratch. Like when you knew you wanted to make a fragrance out of these raw materials, how did you go about commissioning a perfumer to extract whatever accords and scent profiles from those ingredients?
This was the most fun part.
Yeah.
Because I was looking for a perfumer, right? I was looking for somebody to help me out. And I found David Morse from Essenberger.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Wow.
And I said, you have to help me with this, literally with a whole bag full of stuff. Because I knew exactly what I wanted it to be. It wasn't for me that had to be so authentic. Obviously, he's an extremely talented perfumer, but it was very like development. Once you actually know, you spend time in some of those areas, and how it smells in the morning, you know, how it smells in the afternoon, how it smells at night, right? Or there's this magic thing about the forest, because we call it rainforest because it really rains at night. And it's the rain, it's the tree is actually breathing and releasing the water. I had never experienced that. That adds up into the experience as well, right? Adds up to everything that you said at night instead of the morning, what have you. It mutates. And I think we managed to create a fragrance that does that. What all fragrances change, you oxidize and change with air or what have you. But I find that aroma changes so dramatically from skin to skin. So to me, that's very special because it becomes really your fragrance, your scent.
Something I noticed about the aroma scent is that it tends to mingle with your skin and then evolve time, which is like such a lovely journey to the wear for you and for the people who get to smell you.
Yeah, I think it's totally that. I still am pretentious as well because it smells like foliage, right? And
it's very early.
Sometimes it's sweet. Sometimes it's orangey. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a little peppery. And I'm almost like, okay, David did a fantastic job communicating that. Obviously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. He's so talented. Friend of the pod. We love David.
Yeah. And then there's a phase two on the fragrance itself because we continue with fermentation, of course. And we had some really good people there working on it as well. Frank Vogel took the scent and put his skin on it.
Yeah, he's another great as far as the perfumers go.
He's amazing, amazing, amazing. They're all amazing. It's so special. It's so fun to have this moment in which everybody is enamored with scents for the longest time. I feel like it was almost like an 18th century comeback when the spirit of fragrance and scent, which in the past could have been something quite vulgar. But today, people really like to experience that. So many fragrance brands today. It's so wonderful.
Yeah. To my knowledge, Brazil has one of the biggest fragrance industries in the world, at least more than the U.S. But I was wondering if there was any tie between the Costa aroma with Brazilian scent culture, or is this completely based on the Amazon?
It's 100% based on the Amazon. But obviously, the Amazon is Brazil, and I'm Brazilian. So it's very hard to separate, right? Mm-hmm. I think the fragrance, that aroma to me is, I don't know, it's just, you close your eyes, you know where you are. It's transporting. It feels like that, especially for me when I scented, which gets very addictive, actually. I miss it. I run out of a bottle here at the house. Then I'm going to call in Blue Mercury.
You're buying your own product.
Do actually. Yeah. In fact, I do. Sometimes I do.
That's how you know it's good, right?
And that's why I'm saying I'll go on by calling Blue Mercury.
Yeah.
Because 5 o'clock, I don't have to order next day, today's, and I need it.
In terms of being from Brazil and everything, how would you say that the scent culture in Brazil differentiates itself from the rest of the world? Because we know that Western cultures have a very specific relationship to scent, as does the rest of the world. So what does that look like in Brazil?
Interesting that you guys identify this fact or this idea. Because growing up in Brazil, I never thought this scent was a, mind you, people were obsessed with the scent. But most of Brazilians at my time, the early 80s, right, understanding a little bit more fashion and then beauty and fragrances and what have you, I always encountered a lot of international fragrances. So I remember when the car came, was launched, it was a huge thing. Those all the YSL fragrances was a huge thing. So I don't know if when you mention it, it's a huge business-wise, it's huge, but I don't know if you made much of a mark with our Brazilian fragrance necessarily internationally. It's a good question, actually. To answer your question, now, this was very instinctive because it was a true experience for me. And I think Brazilians are very much into the hair. It's a huge hair. It's massive in Brazil. The hair has to be scented. And it's a status symbol, right? It's, you walk into a place and somebody will identify your fragrance. And so it's very Brazilian sense, which fragrance you're wearing. But forgive me here. I remember like a sort of, okay, this fragrance is just so Brazilian, except for our own.
That's so interesting that you say that hair fragrance is so big in Brazil. I would have never made that parallel because we are getting so into body sprays here that we think it's translating to hair as well. I mean, hair fragrance has always been a thing, but now that We're finding every last way to scent every last part of us. I have a feeling that, like Brazil, the Western market will start to see hair fragrance becoming an even bigger thing as well. Don't you think, Sable?
It's absolutely, yeah.
Growing up in Brazil was magical because it was about ritual, right? Even rituals that you don't even think about, or just every day, it was always a ritual. When I think of my sister, who used to press the hair, right? So all her brands used to have sessions of pressing the hair. Mm-hmm. We used to go to the beach, and it was like, you know, in between a carrot and baby oil in Coca-Cola. So it's like people always did those crazy things as an inference. And the scent, it was to me, when, again, that's my own experience growing up in a very small town in Brazil, 3,000 people at the time. The fragrance was always something very superior. They always look at, oh my God, can I afford them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it was really desirable and it was really status. It made me think of when I arrived in New York City again, completely different. I remember coming to New York in 1985 and encountering Charivari, which was super amazing. Barney's boutique, they had like three stores in town, what have you. And then we were saving money to go and buy a Gaultier Junior jacket. It's exactly like that in Brazil when it comes to fragrances. People save to buy their fragrances. It's great.
It's a status thing, like you said. We know that sustainability is one of the upfront core tenets of Costa Brazil, and we are super interested in understanding more about your approach to sustainability as a beauty brand and how you think brands either get it right or wrong with their own sustainability practices, because we know it means something different to everyone. So we would love to hear a little bit more from you directly.
I try to deal with sustainability, or what we call sustainability, in a practical way in which I benefit people, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that people's rights to have good air, people's rights to have good water, and people's rights to have different lives. Mm-hmm. So I think with sustainability as a conservation of humanity, a conservation of people, that's in the back of my mind, right? Because as it started off with building a brand, I realized how difficult it was and it is today to create packaging, for instance, that 100% sustainable. It's like you see so much greenwashing there. And I focus, or maybe I direct my efforts of sustainability where I can actually could make a difference and seeing it. If I have to say, if I don't see it, I'm skeptical. See it, I can scent it and I can taste it, but don't tell me this and that because it's hard. So to me is that. I try to packaging, for instance, For the fragrance, for instance, recycled wood comes from China, but I have the certification. And that serves as an inspiration to create that bark with the Italian artist from Artipovera. So I love that. If you want to carry the fragrance around, you just take it off the container. To me, it's interesting. And the idea was to continue doing that in different areas and so on and so forth. So one day we get there. One could look at it and it doesn't feel sustainable because you still have the refill, and the refill, the bottle is actually painted, which makes it very difficult to recycle. But you have sometimes to compensate. I love the idea of buying my ingredients to the Amazon because every community which I say I buy from, and I have quite a lot of them.
Oh, that's really cool. So
that's
like,
great.
Source all of your raw materials from these Amazonian tribes.
Not just the tribes, right? I discovered Breu with the way when I was, yes. For instance, Breu, you have 42 varieties. Begin with. So you get a call from somebody that lives in this very far away land. And the last trip that I did in Brazil to actually look at another community. And so Breu ended up in Macapá, which is borders with French Guiana. So it's all the way up there. And that was a really insane trip to get to location. And when I got to the location, I was supposed to meet the community. It was one family, guys. It was one family. It was like the grandparents, the parents, and then the kids.
Yeah.
It's like they've been living in that region forever. They go on into the jungle for a period of 3 months, and they collect Breu, they collect Copaíba resin, and they collect Brazil nut. So that's all they do. And those 3 months of work are how they live. You know what I mean? That's the bulk of their survival. And I had introduced them without not knowing them to one of the manufacturers that I work with. thinking that we're doing a good thing, right? You are. If you have the intentions, you are. Mm-hmm. But then you realize that they're not getting paid what they should get paid. Then you have the question, you realize that those people, that family, are not even registered or owners of that spot that they live in forever. Mm-hmm. So it's very insane. It's very interesting how you can open an envelope and there's all those different sort of letters within. It just goes on. And then you have to be very diligent. It's double the work, obviously, triple the work. Things are a lot more expensive because I did not know Braille. The minute I felt that I wanted to use this, it was hard work before the brand, just to identify how to commercialize this thing, this magic. So we mm-hmm. met several different people, trials, this and that. And because of its varieties from region to region, you encounter tremendous difficulty in production because you have to have standards, right? In order to make a product that's precise and there's no really difference in between lock dash to batch. So the level of complexity is tremendous, but I think that's the fun for me. If I was a normal brand out there, I wouldn't care probably.
Yeah.
Such a passionate kind of thing. And I think the sustainability factor here is what we try to do for the communities. Mind you, also, we have incredible packaging and it's as sustainable as it can be. But I'm not sorting out the world's problem with my packaging.
Yeah.
I'm trying, and I'm going to keep evolving it. But in the meantime, hey, I can actually make those connections. I can actually put people together with people. Me, by protecting or by even bringing awareness to a region, you're already creating a slight little movement. It become very much part of that. But for me, it's very emotional too, because every place that I go, you realize how hard these people work and what can we do. So mm-hmm. I partnered with Conservation International way before, right? I used to attend their evenings. We used to fundraise for CI. So it was very natural that they would help me identify communities. In fact, we have this ingredient called Kaya. Again, I'm drifting to another world here beyond fragrance. And they have guided me as well, which is so cool. So great. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That is great.
The chain, the supply chain in fragrance is so opaque. Like no one really understands
sure.
where these ingredients come from and who is picking them. So having them involved in the process and in the ethos of the brand is so... Not many people do that.
Right.
When I decided to partner with Amaris, it came to me that this was going to be my future because I'll be so transparent.
Right.
I'll be able to tell that story even better because now it's science and nature coming together. So the first ingredient that I tried with Amaris in the labs was Braille. Again, Braille is such a complicated resin. It has 17 different terpenes. So it makes any product just, you know, incredibly frustrated because it's really complex. And that's how I love also. It's like nature always wins. And it's like we're here in a lab imitating nature. Nature's all figured out.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to protect. And going back to our sustainability here, that's why I think the indigenous communities and everybody who lives in those regions in the Amazon, either on the banks of any river, you know, it's the army there looking into what's happening. We all feel what climate change really is because we're feeling it, right? Look at how this weather, how bad it is. Although it's a result of deforestation. This really is a result of a lot of complications up north. So we have to be really aware. And I think it's non-negotiable. And it's double the work because before I can do anything, I have really, maybe that's the part that I enjoy the most. Not really, but I feel very responsible towards that. I haven't done anything yet. And that's why I feel that the brand is successful because I would love to enjoy and be able to share with the local communities and innovate in their space.
I know you were one of the brands that when Amaris declared bankruptcy was affected by that. What was that process like? And what was it like buying back your brand?
We should just set the stage. If our listeners aren't as like beauty pilled as we are, Amaris was a biotech brand, which became a beauty incubator. And they were the parent companies of a bunch of small but really well-loved brands, including Costa, as well as JVN, Biossance. And then their broke asses declared bankruptcy, which affected all of these brands, which were otherwise doing really well, which is why then all of these consumers were heartbroken when allegedly Costa Brazil was going away. And now that it's back, you said you bought it back. I think we're both really interested if you do want to dive into that as much or as little as you want, because everyone is so happy that Costa's back. We'd love to get a little bit of the behind the scenes, anything you can say, or just how you brought that business back.
So funny because I'm so sick of it. I'd rather not do.
Great, fine.
I am super happy to be back.
Good.
We're happy you're back too.
It was still unexpected. Look, I came to them. I had to find a partner because COVID came in and I had a group of angel investors, great people. And unfortunately, I know the company went through this dry out, not knowing how to deal with what was happening, which was the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I had no expertise in econ. So that was really detrimental for mm-hmm. at that moment in time, which was so crucial for us, for me to have the right partner. And I didn't. So that I ended up with great excitement going to Everest, which is going to solve my life, right? Oh my God, it's genius. I'm going to be able to create and then somebody's going to take care of the business. And in life, it's very funny because it's all about messages, right? It's all about really absorbing things that the universe throws at you. And I feel like I abandoned the mission and it came back to me. So I had to make peace with the situation. One day I could tell you all the details because it's actually really interesting. It's a book because something that could seem so, okay, collapsed and what have you now, it was very different than that. There was a lot of unexpected situations that I had to do a lot of deep dive in to understand and make it move so we can actually get the brand back. But hey, I have the brand back. And now I've been a lot more, I think, a little more patient, though, guys, every day is mm-hmm. a constant. And I haven't been able to launch a new product 3 years, which is crazy, even with Everest. The only thing that gets me off, excuse me, by language, is that I was supposed to have all the support from that company. And the only support that I got is what I actually could make myself happen. So, a lot of marketing. I did not have a CEO in place. I did not have e-com in place, which was a promise because we've never been a D2C brand. But I think that's where I was looking forward to because for me, it was something new that I would learn. But also, you have the best margin after all, the direct. So all those things went disappearing from me. And I had sold the whole brand. I sold 100% of the brand. I don't know where my mind was. But it was that finding and it's the perfect phase and really understanding that just not so transparent there. Although I actually believe that some people from management actually had very good intentions, did not have. But I did not ruffle any feathers because I was doing things that I really enjoyed. I got a position as a chief creative officer for the company. So I was doing brands. I was creating brands, except making my own move. And when I try to buy back while I'm seeing that the whole thing is going under and they refused to sell it to me. So I had to go a little deeper to the higher court. I had somebody in Delaware, I had people all over the place. It was just really for a good 8 months. I dreamt, lived. Everything was that. Yeah. I could not think. It was intensive. But here we are. We've been a lot more sustainable now. Yep. We're dealing with one day at a time entrepreneurs do. And sometimes it's, my God, really, this is insanity. But it's so exciting. It's exciting to see the support. Exciting to see how people enjoy our fragrance, right? We just got an award, Nofimatic Flair. We had, when I got my first nomination for the fragrance in the universal category from Fragrance Foundation.
Yeah.
Gucci and Chanel and what have you. This is, oh my God, this is amazing. And it really is. So it's fun.
That's great.
1 cent. You did it all just with 1 cent.
Yeah.
I have 9 fragrances that are there.
Yeah. Okay.
The fragrance was the first thing that I did. And I didn't want to launch a fragrance because I was just busy. Francis Walker left Palmin and did a fragrance. I didn't want that. I wanted something different. I wanted people to understand there's a brand behind it. So I felt, let me build the brand. And very honestly, I feel put a name on something and people wouldn't believe it or not. This is so personal. And my ingredients are really sourced to the brand. I have a roster of new ingredients that I could use that I'll be using in the future. So if there was work, there was like research, it's for real. So the fragrance came later because I was already more, a little established. And I launched with very little budget and I had no samples of the fragrance. Now I do. So it's like we launched in a very unique manner and it's a huge success. Everybody loves it. But I have other ones coming in the pipeline.
Excited for that.
So excited.
Yeah. I always think it's such a choice when a brand launches with one fragrance scent. They don't launch couple scents or a couple options, but it really seems like you really have such a clear point of view that it just came out with aroma. So mm-hmm. I'm very curious, like what new scents or what new fragrances you have in mind.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, because like Sable said, Costa's, the aroma has such its own perspective and it is so unique in the space. But I feel like the reception from this one indie fragrance has been pretty outsized in a really great way. So I can't wait to see what other offerings you've got for us.
Yeah, soon.
Soon. Oh, yeah. Our favorite word.
Not him name dropping David Maltz.
I know. That was, what?
I was like, what?
Crazy.
And what's funny is as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, this is such a scent that David would make. I can totally see that.
I hear that. And I can also see and hear him talking about it in the way that he does.
Yeah. It has just such a punchy 3D tangibleness to it that I'm like, yeah, David's really good at that stuff. He's really good at making like literal scents balance really well into wearable fragrances.
Very much that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also really interesting because we live in this culture at large, but also beauty industry culture where it's the only way that people feel like the only way that you can keep eyes on you is with launches every month, every week. And Costa was able to do all of this with just one fragrance.
Yeah.
And you create this cult following. And I think that is the mark of success right there. So that's why I was so happy to see it coming back, because I know that there were people who were really bummed out when their favorite fragrance got taken off the market. So
it's crazy. I feel like all it really takes is one scent to have it like, I don't know what you call it, a bestseller, a must have. What are the mags saying these days? A signature hero product for your brand. Yeah. But so few brands will bet on just one scent. I can only think of the Costa Brazil and Glossier U. That's it. But now Glossier has two more, so they're out of the running.
Yeah.
But yeah, so few brands launch with just one scent, and then that scent becomes it. And part of me feels like it works to do that, because without the distraction of options, the singular scent just feels more special and unique and intentional. I don't know.
There's no perfect way to do it. And we see brands launch with 8 fragrances and couldn't be me. I think we've talked about 3 being the perfect number. I think 1 keeps the story really concise. I think it's also
a great storytelling. That's what it is. Yeah,
it's great for storytelling once, but when you have one thing to consistently talk about, it makes it really hard day in, day out. But again, it's like, that's why we're in this culture of newness, because that's the only thing that can keep our fucking attention. But the brand certainly has, because here we are talking.
Yeah. Like, I was always aware of Costa Brazil just because, like, it was always name checked by all these very glam editorial figures, like the magazine girl, like what's in my bag type of thing. And of course, it's always like one of those scents that model couples share. Mm-hmm. It's always a model couple. I don't know why. One of those, it's just like a scent that hot people wear, inexcessibly hot people. Like New York hot, not reality show hot.
It smells like a hot person fragrance, because hot people are the only ones who can get away with smelling like that.
Oh my God, yes. I was just thinking about that, actually.
And that's not a read. I just mean...
But I was thinking that recently, about like 2 years ago. Sometimes a random person will pop into my head from the past. And I was like, I wonder what happened to that really hot Irish theater director I went on a date with, who had really bad BO. But he was so hot that I was like, I'll allow it.
No. No.
You know how some people have body odor that smells good?
No.
I know. Yeah, you're the wrong person to ask that. But it was, I don't know. But I was just shocked, because I was like, wow, you don't give a shit. You're rocking up to this date fully stinky. And either you can't smell or you don't care. But you're so hot. I need to know more.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Smellulous.
Goodbye forever.
Goodbye forever. No, I hear you. I get it. I support it. I see the vision.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope he's well.
Hope he's well. If you are a hot Irish theater director that does not bathe, go to our website at smellulater.live, I think, and look at our merch. You can also leave us a voice note or drop us a line. Please leave us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts and a review. We love them. You love them. And you can follow us on Instagram at Smell. I haven't done this in so long. Look at me knowing. I'm not even stumbling. Follow us on Instagram at smellulater.mp3. I'm at Time and Book.
And I'm at Sabletooth Tikra.
And until next time, we will
No.
smell you later.